She arrived in a faded dress. Her grandmother had said it on the last morning of her life, sitting in the thin yellow light of a window that overlooked a garden gone to seed. The river does not beg the mountain to notice it. It simply runs and shapes the stone in its own time. Saren Voss had been 12 years old. She had not understood it then. She had pressed her face into her grandmother's shoulder and wept. And later she had folded the words away like a letter she was not yet old enough to read. She was 23 now, and the letter had never left her pocket. Chapter 1. The Road into Ashen Vale. The border town of Ashen Vale smelled of pine resin and iron, and the kind of rain that had not quite decided to fall. Saren arrived on foot, which was not unusual for her. The soles of her boots had been resoled twice with leather she'd bartered for in the valley market, and the hem of her dress, a dusty blue that had once been the color of clear sky, had frayed where it caught on a bramble 2 miles back on the forest road. She had not thought to fix it. She had no thread to spare. She carried a canvas pack that held 4 things of any consequence. A small jar of medicinal salve she'd made herself from meadowsweet and pine resin. A notebook of pressed herbs and their properties. Her grandmother's wooden comb with 2 teeth missing. And the deed to nothing, because she owned nothing, and carried the fact with the same equanimity she carried everything else. Ashenvale was holding a 3-day market that drew wolves from 12 territories. Saren had come to sell her salves. She was not a wolf herself. She had been born into the Voss line, which had once carried the shifter gift, but the gift had skipped her entirely, leaving behind something her pack had spent years calling lack, and she had spent years calling simply herself. When her pack had dissolved after her grandmother's death, scattered by debt and a disputed alpha claim, she had not been invited to join any of the 3 that absorbed the others. Wolfless, unmated, unaffiliated. The word the records used was unattached, which sounded almost pleasant, like a kite. She found a space at the edge of the market square, between a tallow candle seller and a woman trading in dried mushrooms, and she spread her worn canvas cloth on the trestle table she'd paid a copper to rent, and she set out her jars. She did not know, as she arranged them in a careful row by potency, that she was being watched. Chapter 2. The King Who Was Not Announced. Calder Ashvani had not intended to be in Ashenvale at all. He had been riding through on a route scouted for security. He did 4 of these per year, traveling in a reduced party, in plain clothes, taking the pulse of border territories the way a healer takes the pulse at the wrist, rather than asking the patient how they feel. His second, Brennan, thought this habit was reckless. His council thought it was eccentric. Calder thought it was the only honest thing he did. He was the Alpha King of the Varn Dominion, which covered 11 territories and answered to no one, and he was 31 years old, and he was standing at the edge of a market square in a plain charcoal coat with the collar turned up, looking like no one in particular, when he saw her. She was at the far table arranging small glass jars with the focused attention of someone setting a table for company. Her dress was faded blue, the hem trailing a loose thread she didn't seem to notice. Her hair was dark and pinned up imperfectly, with 1 long strand escaping across her jaw. She was not performing anything. She was not looking around to see who was looking at her. She was simply there, in the way a tree is simply there, without apology or advertisement. Calder had met a great many women who knew who he was. The dynamic it produced was something he recognized instantly, a recalibration, a performance, a careful architecture of charm or submission or calculation. He had learned to read it the way some wolves read weather. This woman did not know who he was. He could tell within 10 seconds. He stayed where he was and watched her set out her last jar, straighten the row with 1 knuckle, and open her notebook. Brennan materialized at his shoulder. "We should move. The Merchant Guild liaison is expecting, in a few minutes." Brennan followed his gaze, said nothing, because Brennan was good at his job. Calder walked toward the far table. Chapter 3. What a Jar of Salve Reveals. He picked up the smallest jar and turned it in his fingers. The wax seal was stamped with a small leaf shape, pressed by hand, imperfect, consistent. meadowsweet and pine resin. Her voice was even, not deferential, not sharp. It's good for joint pain in the cold months, the kind that settles into the knuckles. He looked up. Her eyes were dark amber, the color of creek water over clay, and they met his with a directness that was not boldness or challenge. It was simply attention. She was looking at him the same way she'd looked at the jars, as a thing worth regarding honestly. How much for that one? 2 copper. He paid without negotiating, which was apparently notable because she tilted her head slightly. Most people at a border market haggled. He did not. You made these yourself? He set the jar down and picked up the next. This one was labeled in small, precise handwriting. For fever, wolf-fast metabolism, double dosage. I did. The fever one is specific to shifter physiology. The herbs are higher concentration because your kind burns through them faster. She paused. If you're a shifter. I'm guessing from the build. He almost smiled. Correct guess. The salve isn't certified by a guild apothecary, she added, with the frankness of someone who'd learned that offering the disqualifying information first was more dignified than having it weaponized later. I'm unaffiliated, but I've been making these for 3 years and the formulas work. I can give you the source notes if you want to have someone verify. She held out the notebook. It was a gesture of such straightforward trust, handing a stranger her only real record of work, that it caught him off guard. He took it carefully. Read 2 pages. The notation was meticulous. Cross-references, failure notes, adjustments. The kind of record-keeping a guild apothecary would produce, except with no guild backing it. Unaffiliated, he said. By choice, or by circumstance. A pause. She weighed how much to say to a stranger, and he watched her decide on honesty. My pack dissolved when I was 18. I was wolfless, so... She didn't finish the sentence. She didn't need to. So the absorbing packs didn't include you. It's common practice. The 3 words were not bitter. They were simply accurate, and that lack of bitterness was somehow more affecting than anger would have been. He handed back the notebook, bought 2 more jars, asked her name. Saren Voss. Calder, he said. Just that. She nodded as though the single name was normal, which, for a border market, it was. She had no idea. He left before Brennan came looking a second time, and he walked back to their lodging house with the small jar in his coat pocket and the feeling that he had, for the first time in some months, spoken to someone who had no idea what to want from him. It was extraordinarily refreshing. Chapter 4. The third morning. He came back the next morning. He told himself it was because he had questions about the fever salve. There was a young wolf in his household staff who ran perpetual cold season fevers, and the guild apothecary's remedy hadn't worked well. This was true. It was also not the whole truth, but Calder was accustomed to being honest with himself in layers. Seren was already set up when he arrived, notebook open, adding a notation in her small handwriting. She glanced up and the corner of her mouth moved, not quite a smile, but a register of recognition that he found disproportionately pleasing. He asked about the fever salve. She explained the dosing and the timing, and the specific issue with standard formulations. Most guild apothecaries calibrated for beta wolves, whose metabolisms were the modal case. Omegas and alphas both fell outside that modal, in opposite directions. She'd developed separate concentrations. How did you learn this? He sat down on the stool across from her table. There were 2 for customers, and he took the one she hadn't claimed. My grandmother. And then a lot of trial and error, and very careful notes. She tapped the notebook. And listening to people about what wasn't working. The guild apothecaries don't have time to listen. They have quotas. A woman from 2 stalls down leaned over and said something Seren had fixed her daughter's winter cough 2 years running, when 3 certified remedies had failed. Seren looked briefly embarrassed. Mavis, you're making me sound... Effective, Mavis said, and returned to her mushrooms. Calder watched the small exchange, Seren's embarrassment, Mavis's bluntness, the ease between 2 women who had shared a market table over several seasons, and understood something about the texture of Seren's life. She had built small, careful connections. She was known well by a few. She asked nothing from those few except the same honesty she offered. He came back again on the third day. Brennan did not comment. He had served Calder for 7 years, and he understood that commenting on certain things was not part of his job. On the third day, she was packing up her table when he arrived. The market closed at noon on the final day. She had sold nearly everything. There were 3 jars left. "You'll be heading out today?" he asked. "There's a village 2 days south. There's a healer there who's agreed to carry my salves through the winter on consignment." She folded her canvas carefully. "It's a good arrangement." "And then?" She looked up, a little surprised by the question. "Then I figure out the next arrangement." There was no complaint in it, no invitation for sympathy. Just the matter-of-fact orientation of someone who navigated entirely by dead reckoning. No pack, no map, no guarantee. And had made peace with that navigation. He had, in his life, an enormous amount of infrastructure. An entire apparatus of territory and obligation and protocol that held him in place like a building's frame. Watching her fold her canvas, he felt the weight of every beam. "Seren." He had not planned what he was about to say. "I have a request that is outside the normal. That might sound strange. I want to offer you a position." She went still. "Not," he pressed forward because the stillness read like alarm. "Not anything inappropriate. I have a household. There are people in it who need exactly what you do. Not just the salves, but the approach, the listening, the calibration." He paused. "It's a real position. Wages, quarters, full independence of your work. If it's not right after a month, you leave with a full season's wages regardless." She looked at him for a long moment. He did not fill the silence. "You're not from around here," she said finally. It was not a question. "No." "Your coat is plain, but it's very well made." "Yes." "And you paid full asking on the first day without thinking about it." He said nothing. "Who are you?" Not afraid, genuinely asking. He told her. The silence that followed was the longest of the 3 days. Chapter 5. The Weight of a Name. She did not react the way people usually reacted. She did not reach for deference or flattery. She did not recalibrate into the performance he'd grown so practiced at reading. She sat down on the second stool and looked at the 3 remaining jars on her table and was quiet for a moment that had real thought in it. "That changes things," she said. "It doesn't have to change the offer." "It changes what the offer costs me." She met his eyes. "If I come to your household as..." "As what?" "An unlicensed herbalist with no pack and no standing. And it doesn't work. I don't just lose the position. I've been in the Alpha King's household. That's a story that follows me. Every pack, every licensed apothecary, every territory I go to after, they'll have opinions about why I left, or why I was sent away, and none of those opinions will be generous." He had not thought of it from that angle. It was the angle of someone who lived entirely in the space where other people's narratives about her could become walls. "That's fair," he said. "I'm not saying no." She picked up one of the jars, turned it in her hands. "I'm saying I need to understand what I'm agreeing to, what the actual role is, what my autonomy looks like. And I need it in writing, which I realize might sound presumptuous, given what you are." "It doesn't. It sounds sensible." He paused. "I'll have Brennan draw up a formal letter of appointment tonight. You can review it before you commit to anything." She set the jar down. "You travel with a secretary. A second. In plain clothes to a border market. I like to see things directly." She looked at him with that same clear-eyed attention that had caught him the first morning, not performing anything, just seeing. "All right, Calder, show me the letter." He stood. "I'll have it to you by evening. Where are you staying?" "The Traveler's Lodge on the Mill Road, room 4. A pause. "It's the one with the window that sticks." He almost smiled. This time, he let himself. Chapter 6. What the Court Made of Her. The Varn seat was 11 days' ride north of Ashenvale, and Seren spent most of it revising her understanding of what she had agreed to. She had her own horse, arranged by Brennan, a steady gray mare she named Thistle, because the animal had the mare's own opinion about everything. She rode at the front of the small party with Calder, which was apparently a social signal she didn't know to decode until Brennan told her, with careful neutrality, that it was where he put people he was inclined to trust. The seat itself was a fortress estate built into the shoulder of a granite ridge, darker stone than she expected, softened by the ivy that had been growing on the east wall for longer than anyone could remember. It smelled of wood smoke and cold stone and the specific quality of enclosed, serious work. The court's reaction to her arrival was not hostile exactly. It was something more corrosive, a baffled dismissal. She heard the assessments in corridors, in the way that people forget that someone without a wolf's hearing might still have ears. Wolfless. Unaffiliated. What is she, exactly? An herbalist, apparently. From a border market. She arrived in a faded dress. This last one was not meant cruelly, she thought. It was simply the shorthand they'd reached for. The faded dress. The most visible mark of her insufficiency. She heard it 3 times in the first 2 days, and by the 3rd time, she had made a decision. She would not change the dress. She had a second, better one. A deep green wool that Calder's housekeeper, a warm-handed woman named Dova, had pointed toward with clear suggestion. She would not wear it yet. Not as a concession to their measuring. Her work, on the other hand, she let speak immediately. The young wolf, with the recurrent fever, a boy of 16 named Pell who served in the stables, had been suffering for 2 winters. She adjusted the formulation to his specific weight and metabolism, sat with him while he took the first dose and explained what to watch for, and came back the next morning to check. By the 4th day, the fever had not returned. Pell told the stablemaster. The stablemaster mentioned it to the head of household. Word moved through the Siut in the way that useful things move, sideways and without announcement, person to person, based on results. The court took longer. Courts always did. Chapter 7. A comb with 2 teeth. Missing. 3 weeks in, the Lord Steward, a wolf named Gareth Prynne, who had served the seat for 20 years and viewed every new addition to the household as a variable to be assessed and filed, came to her workroom with a headache that had lasted 4 days. Seren looked at him without comment on the 4 days, because she could see that coming to her at all had cost him something. She asked questions, listened carefully, gave him a specific preparation and instructions, and told him to come back in 2 days if it hadn't improved. He came back in 1 day to say it had. He did not become warm exactly, but he stopped using the phrase the herbalist as though it were a slight. He began calling her by name. Calder noticed. She could tell because he said nothing about it, and the nothing had a quality of satisfaction. She kept her workroom in meticulous order. Her notebook lived open on the central table. On the windowsill, she had placed 2 things. The small jar of meadowsweet salve she had not sold, the last of the first batch she'd made in this new place, and her grandmother's comb. The comb was not decorative. It was dark-stained wood, small, practical, with 2 teeth missing on the left side. She used it every morning. She had used it every morning for 11 years. When she combed her hair and the gap caught, it made a small sound, not unpleasant, that was as fixed a part of her mornings as light. Calder came to her workroom on a Thursday evening, which had become an informal habit. He arrived. She made tea over the small brazier she'd been allowed, and they talked about things that had nothing to do with his territories or her position. Books, weather systems, the particular stubbornness of ivy. She had stopped being surprised at how easily they talked, but she had not stopped noticing it. That evening, he picked up the comb from the windowsill and turned it over. She watched him notice the missing teeth. Watched him decide not to comment on them in a certain way. Not with pity. Not with the kind of performance of not noticing that was its own comment. He simply looked at it. "This is old," he said. "My grandmother's." He set it down with care, exactly where it had been. "Tell me about her." She had not talked about her grandmother to anyone in years. She had kept her, the memory, the words, the yellow window light, as something private, not because she was ashamed, but because the people around her were rarely the kind of people she wanted to offer that particular truth to. She told him. Not all of it, but the shape of it. The garden gone to seed. The saying about the river and the mountain. The way her grandmother had held knowledge with open hands, not as authority, but as gift. Calder listened with the same quality of attention she had first noticed in the market square, complete, unperforming. When she finished, he was quiet for a moment. "She made you what you are," he said. "She showed me that what I am was enough to start with." The distinction felt important. "I built on it, but she gave me the ground." He looked at her across the small table with the brazier's light between them. And she understood in the particular way that certain understandings arrive, not with ceremony, but with the weight of something that has been true for a while and is only now being acknowledged, that this had moved well past a professional arrangement. She also understood that he was going to say something about it, and that she needed to decide how she stood before he did. The river does not beg the mountain to notice it. It simply runs. She had not begged anyone's notice in years. She would not start now, and she would not pretend she didn't know her own worth in order to make the knowing of it easier for someone else. "Calder," her voice was even, "I'm not going to be less than I am to make whatever this is more comfortable for the court. I want to say that plainly." He looked at her with something that shifted visibly in his expression. Not surprise, not reassurance. Recognition. As though she had named something he had also been thinking, from the other side. "I know." His voice was low. "I'm not asking that. I would not ask that." A pause. "I'm asking something else entirely." "I know," she said. And she did. Chapter 8. What the faded dress was worth. It took time. That was the honest part that mattered. He did not announce anything abruptly. He did not make gestures that required her to respond before she'd decided. He gave her the rarest thing anyone with his kind of power can give. Unhurried space, and the knowledge that the space was not indifference. The mating bond declared itself, as bonds do in the old tradition. Not in a single moment, but in the way she became aware of it over a series of mornings. A warmth at the edge of her senses. A directional certainty. The specific way that a room with him in it was different from a room without. She was not a wolf. She had no wolf self to answer the pull. But she was, as her grandmother had always said, made of something that carried its own current, and that current ran toward him with the steadiness of water finding its own level. She told him one morning, plainly, as she would tell him anything. He already knew. He had known since Ashenvale, he said, which meant he had held it for 2 months without pressure, which she took as evidence of the kind of person he actually was, rather than the kind of person his position could have made him. The court had more difficulty than he did. Lord Steward Prynne handled it with the pragmatism of someone who had watched her fix a 4-day headache in one. Brennan had apparently told Calder on the road back from Ashenvale that whoever she was not performing anything, and Brennan's judgment was trusted. The loudest difficulty came from Counselor Ethe, a woman who managed trade relations and had apparently had a particular vision for Calder's mating that involved a strategic alliance with a major pack. She did not confront Seren directly. She worked in the way of courts, through implication and architecture, suggesting in various formal meetings that an unaffiliated companion was a structural weakness. Seren was in a meeting where this argument was made. She had been invited, a small new step, Calder bringing her into the rooms where things were decided. She let Ithy finish. Then she said calmly, "The weakness the counselor is describing is lack of pack affiliation. I want to suggest that what she's actually concerned about is lack of a legible quantity, something that can be counted and recorded and used in a ledger of alliances. Those aren't the same concern. I can't provide a pack alliance. I can provide something harder to counterfeit. Work that speaks for itself, and an honest account of what I am. If that's a structural weakness, then the structure has a problem with honesty." The room was quiet. Calder said nothing, because there was nothing to add. Counselor Ethe did not become an ally. but she became a person who understood that the woman in the faded dress, she still had not worn the green wool, and had decided she might not wear it until she chose to, was not a problem that could be solved by being ignored or diminished. The mating ceremony was quiet. It was held in the small courtyard where the ivy ran up the east wall, Seren's choice, because she liked that the ivy had been growing longer than the politics of the place. Dova cried. Pell, who had not had a fever in 2 months, watched from the stable door and looked as though he'd been given something he hadn't known to ask for. Seren wore the faded blue dress. Not as defiance. As something more precise than that. A refusal to pretend that the road that had brought her here, the worn boots, the rizzled soles, the border market, the canvas spread on a rented table, was something to be left behind and forgotten. It had been the river. It had shaped the stone. She was proud of it. Epilogue. 1 year later, the garden at the east wing of the Varney seat had been Dova's idea, a practical plot for Seren's herbs. But Seren had expanded it in the way that things expand when someone who cares about them is in charge. With a kind of thoughtful sprawl, beds organized by use, a small wooden bench near the meadow suite where she sat in the mornings when the light was good. She was sitting there now, with her grandmother's comb in her hand. She was not combing her hair. She was just holding it, the way you hold something that has carried meaning through time. The dark wood was warm from her palm. She ran her thumb across the teeth, the solid ones, then the gap, then the two remaining on the left side, and the small, imperfect texture of it was as familiar as her own heartbeat. The garden smelled of pine resin and late autumn cold, and something sweet she hadn't planted, coming from wherever the wind came from today. She heard the door from the east wing open. She did not turn around. Calder sat down beside her on the bench. He had been in a council session since early morning, and she knew, from the particular quality of the silence he brought with him, that it had been difficult. He looked at the comb in her hand. He had learned its history over the past year in the way you learn something you love, in pieces, returned to. He knew about the missing teeth. He knew about the yellow window. He knew the saying. "He moved on the southern trade proposal," he said. "We reached a compromise. Brennan thinks it's a good one." "Is it?" "I think it is." A pause. She framed the argument the same way you did, in that meeting last winter. Work that speaks for itself. "I think she's been sitting with that for a year." Seren smiled, looking at the meadow suite. "Pell asked if he could apprentice with you," Calder said. "Formally. He has a good eye for the work, he said to tell you. He's been reading your notebook." "I know. I've been leaving it where he could reach it." He was quiet for a moment with the warmth of that. She turned the comb in her hands. 1 year. The seat had changed around her in ways that were hard to point to directly. Like how the ivy changes a wall, not by force, but by persistent, patient presence. The Lord Steward called her by name without thinking about it. 3 Border Territory healers had written asking for her formulas, and she had sent them freely with the source notes. There was a small guild now, unofficial, unlicensed, unbothered, made up of unaffiliated herbalists, with Seren's name at the top, not because she'd claimed authority, but because she'd answered every letter. The court still did not entirely know what to make of her. She had decided that was acceptable. The comb's gap caught her thumb. "The river does not beg the mountain to notice it," her grandmother had said. "It simply runs and shapes the stone in its own time." She had not understood it at 12, sitting in the yellow light. She had understood it better at the border market, setting out her jars, unperforming. She had understood it most fully here, on this bench, in this garden she had made from a practical plot, into something that resembled the garden of her grandmother's memory. Something with its own logic, its own sprawl, its own refusal to be only useful. She had not changed the stone by force or announcement. She had simply run, steady and clear, and the stone had changed around her. The mountain had not been conquered. It had, in its own time, looked down and understood what had always been there. She held the comb out, flat on her palm, between them. Calder looked at it. He had never asked why she kept it. He knew. He put his hand over hers, not taking it, just holding her hand and the comb together in the last of the autumn warmth. "She would have liked you," Siren said. "She appreciated people who listened. Then she would have found me barely adequate." The self-deprecation was gentle. "I'm still learning. You're learning." Siren closed her fingers around the comb and leaned into him, looking at the meadow sweet. "That's the whole thing. That's all it ever was." The garden held its quiet around them, and somewhere in the ivy on the east wall, the year's last bird moved and was still and was not afraid. End.